And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, indeed, another Friday has rolled around oh so quickly. Nice to have you here at 77 WABC. Mayor will be here in just a second. I understand he's caught in that proverbial congestion here in New York City. Mm-hmm. It happens. The big story, of course, over the last couple of days, the bridges, and of course, in each and every newspaper this morning and on television, everybody looking at our own bridges. We'll get the input and the view from the mayor's chair here in just a little bit. But it seems somewhat disturbing that the Brooklyn Bridge is reportedly in what they call poor condition. Not that it's going to, I gather not that it's going to fall down. I guess nobody's going to say, you know what, it's going to fall down. They're not going to say that.
That's a pretty sturdy bridge. I go over it every morning to come to work.
Well, I'm sure the people on I-35 in Minneapolis thought that there was a pretty sturdy bridge up until 6 o'clock 2 days ago. When it came down. It's interesting. We're going to be, by the way, talking at 11:25. We're scheduled to talk with the man that is in charge of the Tappan Zee Bridge. Ah. And that has been the focal point of some concern and certainly discussion over the last, five or six, 7 years on what to do with it, because it is in constant repair. And I'm not sure they're getting ahead of themselves in that repair, and so they know it needs to be replaced. You just don't throw up a bridge. You just don't, say you go to the bridge store and buy one and have them deliver it. It takes years and years and years to build these things.
Well, and listening to Scott Salato's reports yesterday, I mean, this was built, I believe he even used the word, as a temporary bridge to be used for about 50 years, and now we're into the 52nd year.
Is that the reason? I must admit I hadn't heard that. That's the reason that the 50-year lifespan of the Tappan Zee it was designed that way, because they had anticipated a more permanent bridge?
Right. That's,
I'd never heard that before.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. And I got talking with some friends about this who used the Tappan Zee quite a bit. They said, well, instead of trying to dilly-dally and go through the politics of, do we or don't we build a bridge, do we build a tunnel, leave the Tappan Zee up, and then start building the second bridge right next to it, so you don't have to tear it down and figure out a way for these people to get around.
Well, I would think that would be exactly the right thing to do. The only decision that needs to be made by politicians, who don't like to make decisions. Most politicians don't like making decisions. It's the last thing on earth they want to do, because they're going to have to be responsible for those decisions, even though that's what they're getting paid to do, is to what extent the bridge is designed for 8 lanes, 10 lanes, 12 lanes. Do you put a commuter rail service across it as well? You need to kind of almost design these things in. But again, as you say, if you built it right next to the existing Tappan Zee Bridge, you could design a full service bridge, if you will, which has all the things that you sort of soup to nuts. And then if you only had X amount of dollars or interest at the moment, you could only build what you have to build, and add on to it at the have it designed so that it can be added on at a later date, something like that.
Yeah, and as I listen to these reports today, and you have. I think it was the Federal Highway Administration that came out, that basically said there are thousands of bridges. In fact, in New York State alone, there are 2,000 bridges that have been described as structurally deficient. And that sounds scary, but it doesn't mean they're unsafe. It doesn't mean they're unsafe at all. It just means that they're structurally deficient. There's some work that needs to be done on those things.
Okay. I mean, I guess maybe everything is structurally deficient, but at one level or another. The mayor has arrived. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Your golf game, for example.
Oh, please. Oh, no. You promised you would not bring up my golf game.
Well,
you
promised me. If you're going to insult our bridges, I mean, have to defend them.
Good morning. You're absolutely right about my golf game. It is structurally deficient.
It's mine, too, incidentally.
Okay, we've been into this thing. Let's jump into it and your view and what your experts are telling you about the
well, in New York City, there are no bridges that are unsafe. If they were unsafe, we'd close them instantly. We used to have, about 10 years ago, we had 40 bridges that were rated poor. That is down to 3. And out of those 3, 2 of them are footbridges, one of which was damaged by a fire, and we don't even plan to repair it. We're just going to...
Just going to leave it closed.
Leave it closed, mm-hmm. Yeah. Nobody uses the thing. It's in Flushing Meadows, and just nobody
uses it. Over the lake there, I think, isn't it?
Someplace,
I think it's over the lake.
There's the 78th Street Bridge over the FDR. needs repairs to its staircase and undercovering. And the Brooklyn Bridge, which you see the papers about, number one, the bridge itself is fine. The on and off ramps have some problems, need to be resurfaced and that sort of thing. And it's scheduled. The Brooklyn Bridge, the ramps are scheduled over the next few years. Each one will slowly be shut down and redone. But that just means you have a rough ride. The bridge itself is in perfect condition, and all of the bridges in the city get inspected every couple of years. And, you know, the last bridge that we did close down for major repairs, we closed it. And it was a traffic problem, but we fixed
it. Yeah, the Williamsburg, the Manhattan bridges have all been under major repair for
absolutely.
Years.
Go up and look at across the Harlem River. Brand new bridges. We're doing them one by one.
You know, I think what this points out, this bridge that fell down in Minneapolis, is just how sensitive the infrastructure is to the lifeblood of a city. And I know that's part of your 2030 plan New York City.
If we don't have bridges, you can't get in and out of Manhattan. You can't get off Long Island, which includes Queens and Brooklyn. If we don't have steam, you can't heat and cool a lot of the buildings. We don't have electricity. The elevators don't work, and your computer won't work, and everything else. If we don't have phones, you can't communicate, and you can't call for ambulances. If you don't have roads, the ambulances and the police and the fire can't get there. Sure, we're all dependent on infrastructure, and we will be more so in the future because all of this stuff gives us services that we want. If you don't want to be dependent on anything other than God's infrastructure, you can go out and live in the forest, but nobody wants to do that, or very few people want to do that. What I thought is, you know, I feel sorry for the mayors out in Minneapolis, there's a few of them that I know because they're all part of this Mayor's Coalition Against Guns, and right now they're pretty busy, but I thought over the weekend, when things quiet down, I will give them a call, and, you know, just...
But, you know, everybody's pointing fingers at everybody else because that's what happens after these situations.
Well, I don't know. I'm not pointing any fingers.
No, I wasn't suggesting
you were. You have to wait and see what happened and why it wasn't caught in advance.
Exactly. But it also reflects back on what you've said so many times before. Politicians generally don't like to make decisions, yet planning and forward thinking is so critical, as evidenced here.
Well, we are investing in this third water tunnel. We've put it's gone on, I think, something like 50 years since it was started. Maybe it's 40 years, something like that. We've invested more money in it than the previous four or five administrations together because there's always been the temptation when times are tough and there's people want more services than they're willing to pay for. You give the people the services that are visible and you cut out the kinds of maintenance. Who wants to spend money on a tunnel 600 feet under the ground?
Nobody ever sees.
Or maintenance on a bridge, painting it so it doesn't rust, or redoing the motors that let a bridge that opens work reliably, redo the concrete, which eventually crumbles and doesn't last forever, dredge the water so that the boats can get through, all of these things. Nobody ever wants to spend the money on that. And I just said when we came into office, even though we had a big budget crisis, the biggest maybe in the city's history ever, because of the internet bubble collapse and because of 9/11 and a general downturn in the economy, I said, we just can't not put the money in. And there was gnashing of teeth, and we sat around tearing our hair out. I have little left, although not because of that. You know, you can't do everything, but there's some things you just have to make the investment in. God forbid one of our two water tunnels were to collapse. You wouldn't have any water. You know, we use billion gallons a day or something. You couldn't truck it in. What did you do? You'd literally close down the part of the city serviced by that tunnel, and it's so far underground, it's very hard to maintain. In fact, the way the two old tunnels were designed, the valves are down 500 feet under the ground. So if you closed them to try to drain one of the tunnels and work on it, nobody's sure you could open it again. You can't get to them. The new tunnel we're building, the water goes along underground, comes up near the surface. That's where the valve is, and then goes back down on the other side, so you could maintain it. Anyways, hopefully nothing will happen. And we'll complete the water tunnel in 2010, 2011, thereabouts. I think the drilling's been done. Now they're lining the tunnel. And then we'll turn that one on. And then over the next couple of decades, hopefully the city will invest the money in going and one by one closing down the other two tunnels and relining them and seeing where there's damage. One of them leaks millions of gallons a day, which sounds like a lot of water.
But not really, when you're talking billions.
Right, it really isn't. But, you know, you have to make these investments. You're right.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on a second. We've gone long here. Let me take a break. We'll come back again in just a moment at 77 WABC. We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show at 77 WABC. One of the controversies this week, and again, it seems to be a yearly event, has to do with the 9/11 ceremony.
Well, I hope it's not a big controversy. And you're right, every year there are people who would like to do things different. You can't do everything. This year, because of all the construction going on, which includes the World Trade Center Memorial, which is what we really want to get done because that'll be the right location venue for every memorial going forward after that. The West Side, there's just no room for the people, and the Port Authority believes, and I guess I agree with them, that going down into the down the ramp is just too dangerous. There's just too much equipment around there. It isn't stopping. We'll stop the construction while we're doing this because we don't want noise to interfere with reading of the names, which is a very solemn part of the memorial service. But what we've done is, I think when it's all done, people will even look over and say, you know, you were right. This is even not better, but different. And you want to do something different each time to remember and tell the story. And so we've moved the reading of the names and where people can stand over to the other side of the site. It really looks right onto the site. And then instead of going down into the ramp to lay flowers, people will be able to walk along the whole south side of the site and leave flowers there, and you'll look down. You can't go down the ramp, but you're looking down on it. And I think, you know, this is right by where the 1010 house was. We lost so many firefighters, and we're having first responders read names. So that ties that together a little bit in a nice way. And I will meet with some of the families who want to express themselves and listen. We don't have much choice because of just the physical location. The road isn't wide enough anymore. Where we used to have it doesn't work. We just got to get used to the fact that there's a lot of construction going there. And the construction is what we want because that's how we're going to get this memorial. You know,
I haven't asked you about the memorial. How's the funding for that? We're getting there.
We're going to start going around the country with some beams on a truck so that people can sign the beams, which will be used in construction of the memorial, and make donations. I'll go to a couple of cities. We haven't decided where yet to give a talk and get some publicity for it. I'm still raising money. If you want to give us we can take another $5 or $10 million from you, easy.
Okay,
I'd like to do it.
When you make phone calls to other cities, do you find that the distance makes a big difference in how people view what we're doing here in New York?
There, people throughout the rest of this country do recognize this was an attack on America, not just on New York. People in other countries who enjoy freedom recognize it was an attack on freedom, not just on New York. But it's also true that the vast bulk of the money will be given by people and companies located here in New York. And one of the reasons to have these beams go around the country and get lots of signatures is to have the rest of the country understand this is their memorial as well. But most of the money will certainly come from New York City, and we're not quite there yet. We wanted to raise $300 million. I said, no, it's not enough. I want to make sure we have an endowment so that they can run the museum and not have to worry about cutting back when times get tough and not have to have the price of tickets be so high people can't afford them. And so we're going to raise an extra $50 million as an endowment, and we're into that $50 million phase now. And, I've had a little more time. I could get on the phone, and we're getting there. Johnny Rosenwald, And Christy Ferrer have worked very hard on this, as well as all the board members have been helpful. Most have made donations, and all have helped in making phone calls and setting up breakfasts. And we've had a number of industry breakfasts where then solicit, you know, all the people who are in the same industry who come to that breakfast. So we're chugging along. But the most important thing is that this memorial is going up. And I want to get that done, and I think the ceremony that we'll have on 9/11 will be very moving. It is different, and some people don't like change, but you know, I think you owe it to the people we lost and their families to make it interesting. And in terms of the controversy, look, this is New York. There's always controversy. That's what's healthy. That's what democracy is all about.
On the memorial and in the museum, will the attack on Washington and the Pentagon, will that be, and the plane Pennsylvania, will that all be part of this?
All be part of the same thing, and the names which will surround the two voids will be grouped by, I don't want to leave anybody out, but there's the plane, for all the people, for example, on the plane that went down in Shanksville will be together. All the people on the plane and in the Pentagon will be together. The people in the North Tower will be together. The people who are in the South Tower will be together. People we don't know where they were at the time will be together. There's a half a dozen people that were killed in 93 in the bombing. They will be there. We decided to include that.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and then each of the two airplanes that went into the two towers, they will be grouped together.
Okay. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, on a Friday, we will be taking your phone calls as well as we always do, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. But here on the half hour, another break, here's George Weber. WABC. We continue here on the John Gambling Show. Michael Bloomberg is with me, as he is each and every Friday. And I want to talk about the schools for just a little bit. I had California Congressman George Miller on, who was the sponsor of No Child Left Behind,
right.
And it's coming up for reauthorization.
Yep.
I don't know if you've read what some of the ideas that they are looking for and the changes.
There's a whole bunch of things, but Bush deserves credit for focusing on education. This congressman and the Congress deserves credit for focusing on education. We can't complain about the White House and both houses of Congress and both parties when they do something right. I mean, they do things right. And I've been this vocal, as you know, saying they don't address the real issues. No Child Left Behind is an attempt to address the issues. I think it was the law they passed wasn't fully funded and it didn't do everything.
Correct.
And now
almost
we have a chance to change it. But you got to give them credit for at least trying to look at it. And here in New York City, Joel Klein, who incidentally I'm going to the Yankee game tonight with.
The chancellor.
Maybe.
Longest chancellor in New York City schools in history.
Longest chancellor in the city. He's done a spectacular job. I don't know all the others, but it's hard to see anybody having – I don't know if anybody – you could make the case going all the way back for 2,000 years was better. I can tell you that nobody modern day has made the difference that he has made, and his legacy will really be in tens of thousands of kids who will grow up to be adults, and their whole lives will have been influenced by the improvement in the New York public school system and the teachers that Joel is lucky enough to work with, and the principals and the administrators and school safety and custodians. Everybody makes a big difference here. But I'm going to go to the Yankee game with Joel, and Billy Thompson, the controller, is going to come. So
that means there's an extra seat in the box.
We're going to have six people. We'll have a lot of fun. I always have a couple of beers and a couple of boxes of popcorn.
That's what it's all about.
And maybe if we get really lucky, A-Rod will hit a home run.
Yeah, he's been looking for one.
I did not call him the other day and say, don't do it until I get there on Friday night. Actually, I played golf in a charity tournament that Joe Torre, the manager of the New York Yankees, leads. He has an organization, Safe at Home, which deals with domestic violence. He and his wife founded this. He was a product of domestic violence, and he did this in memory of his mother, Margaret. And he raises a lot of money, and he does a spectacular. This is one of the nicer guys.
I know Joe pretty well.
You know, I've always thought that this guy could manage anything. That look on his face, he's just, you know, he never smiles. He's always so serious. He is a sweetheart behind that. As a golfer, sometimes. Oh, there you go. Sometimes, there you go. No, me too.
Criticizing,
Well, he criticized me. He said I hit it straight but short. He's right about half of that. It wasn't as straight. He was very nice to me, actually. But anyway, so we'll go to the game tonight, and I wish him well, and love to see a Subway Series. And
You focus on the big pictures, and I'm just curious, back to No Child Left Behind, how do you feel about the federal government being involved in the educational process rather than just the states and local communities?
I don't mean to give you one of these I want it both ways answers, but I think there is a both ways answer to that. You do want local control of schools. I'm a very big believer in that because every city and town and county is different. They have the people that go to school come from different parts of the world. The economics of each city is different. The commute is different. History is different. So you want to have a lot of local stuff. And but from a national level, we are in competition with the rest of the world. Everybody in this country who goes to school will eventually become an adult and vote and support us and fight for us and be our leaders. And so the country has a vested interest in the whole thing. And I think the appropriate place, mix of what's federal and what's state, is if you want to take federal money, they should set standards. If you don't want federal money, you don't have to. That's the kind of balance that we generally use in most things in this country. And I do think that the federal government should raise the standards and should not allow anybody who takes federal money to dumb down the standards. One of the problems with No Child Left Behind is to qualify, you have to have your students improve. Well, if you're monkeying around with the tests, making them easier, that was not the purpose of...
There are elements of that in the new reauthorization plan, in my view, but that's...
Right, I understand that, and that's what we should fix. I couldn't agree more. And you're not going to get everything you want. You know, the people that don't believe in testing. Well, you can't run anything unless you test and find out where you're doing a good job and where you're not, because you want to move resources to where you're not and help those, that part of the country, that part of the student body, that fix that bridge, whatever it is. And we've got to be willing to test. And I always love this people saying, oh, you're teaching to the test. Well, if the test is, can you read? Yes, that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Can you add two and two?
Right. Well, you know, they don't have to give you the answer because you can do two and two. Presumably, you should be able to do three and three. So teach them two and two and test them on three and three. And then you're not teaching to the test. But come on.
It seems to me that the No Child Left Behind, which I support on the one hand, in one of the entities that you talked about, really developed because of the vacuum that was created by the states in their sort of failure to get the job done.
I think it's fair to say that throughout this country, we all, including New York City, have failed our students. Now, I can't speak for other municipalities. I hope they're doing the same thing we are. We're trying to make it better. And there's a lot of evidence that Joel Klein and Dennis Walcott and all the 80,000 teachers and a couple thousand principals, whatever, they've all made a difference. Graduation rates in this city in the last four or so years are up 20%. Math scores are up 20%, and particularly among those ethnic groups that tested poorly, the improvement is even greater. So than among those groups that have traditionally tested well. So we are going in the right direction, but nobody should be satisfied with the progress. We should be satisfied that we made some progress, but we shouldn't be willing to rest on our laurels. We have a long ways to go. And for the rest of the country, I assume they also have the same kind of problems. Are they addressing it? I think it's fair to say some places are and some places aren't. You know, a guy like Rich Daley is, a strong mayor and had a big impact on the Chicago school system. There are parts of this country where they have particular problems because of leaving this, not doing the right thing for so long in the past. It's awful hard to catch up, but that's what you get elected for. You know, play the hand that's dealt you and take whatever you have and make it better.
The governor vetoed a welfare bill this week that had passed both the Senate and the Assembly.
Not an easy decision for the governor, because I'm sure there's a lot of pressure, but Eliot Spitz has stood up and deserves a lot of credit for that. This was a very misguided bill. And what it did is it said people should go to work in high-paying jobs or not go to work at all. And the bottom line is, if you're starting out, you have to take entry-level jobs, learn how to work with people, learn how to dress and behave, learn all the basic skills, and then move up. And I would rather put people in entry-level jobs than have them sit on welfare and no jobs. And to say, oh, they should go into high-paying jobs, let's get serious. The real world is the people we're trying to help here. The reason they need help is they just don't have the skills. And if you, it sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but if you say, let's only put them in high-paying jobs, you're walking away from them. It's a disgrace. And I'm not willing to walk away from those people. I think they need our help, and we are lucky enough to have the wherewithal, and we should be the ones to stand up and help them. And the governor did exactly the right thing with this, deserves a lot of credit for this.
If the bill had been signed, would it have cost a lot more money?
It would have cost more money, but also there'd be an awful lot of people who would never leave welfare, because they will never – you can't jump right to being president of the company. You got to start out in the mailroom and work your ways up. You did it. I did it. Some people say, oh, that's not fair. Well, I don't know if it's fair or not. I don't know if fairness is anything. It's the real world. You have to have skills and prove yourself and pay your dues, as we would say. And that means starting at the bottom. It's a tradition of this country. You come here and you start out and you work your way up. And
right.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I know you. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. The controversy and the aggravation between Spitzer and Bruno right at the moment is what it is, and will unfold as it will. But it has really sort of slowed down the process in Albany. And doesn't that affect problems and things that you're looking
I
programs
think
you're
that,
looking for?
There's no question that we are very dependent on Albany, and we want a legislature and an executive branch that works well together, and hopefully that will all work out. At the moment, you know, it's the summer quiet season, so I can't tell you that there's a lot of things being held up, although there are probably some appointments and some bills that should be done. But, you know, in spite of all of the stuff you read in the paper, the governor is governing, and Bruno and Silva are leading their respective houses of parts of the legislature, and things are getting done. But I think it'd be in everybody's interest to not have these kinds of controversies. How that all works out, I don't know. But I can't look you in the eye and say, at the moment, we're really hurting in terms of not getting things done. It's not good, and hopefully it'll get resolved quickly. But, you know, they still do their jobs. I mean, and it isn't easy when your name is in the paper all the time and everybody's criticizing you. I'm sympathetic to that.
All right, let me take a break. When we come back, we've got phone callers, 1-800-848-WABC. You'll ask the questions next at 77 WABC. WABC. We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. The phones are flashing, Mr. Mayor. We're going to go to line number four first.
Wayne in Manhattan.
Wayne, go ahead. What's your question for the mayor?
Oh, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I am a disabled New Yorker. I'm an attorney, and I've lived here all my life. And I think New York City is in the best shape it's ever been. But there's one problem. On the buses, I don't require a wheelchair, just canes, but the seats and the windows are not marked for disabled people.
All right, Wayne.
Okay, well, Wayne, all of the MTA buses in the city are handicap accessible, and I don't know that they have seats that say reserved for the handicap. I'll find out that. That's interesting. But I have talked to the MTA and have checked. I remember doing that a while ago when the issue came up, and they assured me all of the MTA buses are handicap accessible. And, you know, I think unless you're handicapped, you don't recognize just how difficult it is to get around. But, you know, the city has over the years been improving. Every street corner now, there's a ramp down on both sides so that you can take your wheelchair down. But, you know, John, you and I are lucky. If easy to get around when you're...
We complain sometimes, but
and then
shouldn't.
The people a lot tougher anyway.
Wayne,
so, Wayne, thank you for your nice call.
All right, let's go to Phyllis in Queens. Phyllis, you've got the ear of the mayor. Go.
Oh, hi, Mayor. I don't know who I'm going to vote for after you leave, but my question is the salting of our roads and other cold cities, doesn't that cause an undermining factor for cement? Because it certainly ruins our trees and our roads and potholes,
Phyllis,
or whatever.
Two things. Number one, I don't know who's you're going to vote for because I don't know who's going to run.
Me either.
I can tell
certainly
you, I am not running for mayor again.
That's
8 years is fine. Thank you very much, and you're nice to call. You couldn't be more right. I get good news and bad news. The good news is on the four East River bridges, Manhattan, Brooklyn, Williamsburg, and Queensboro, we use a different kind of thing that melts the ice. It's paid for by the federal government. It's phenomenally expensive. Mucho, mucho, as my press secretary would say, times expensive than salt. Unfortunately,
for the obvious reasons, though.
For obvious reasons.
So you don't...
We do use salt on all the other bridges, and you couldn't be more right. And that is a problem. It does cause corrosion. It does keep your maintenance costs up. The trouble is, at the moment, the only thing that this is one chemical that is an alternative and is environmentally safe, it is just very expensive. Fortunately, the federal government has a program. And why am I here defending the federal government again? They're doing something else good for the city.
They're paying for whatever it is.
Things, or do only bad things, right? I just sometimes agree with them, sometimes I don't. Anyways, Phyllis, you're great to call. Thank you.
Thank you, Phyllis. Let's see here. Is it Avi in New Jersey? Good morning, Avi.
Yes, good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I travel into New York every day, and with the terrible traffic on the Staten Island Expressway, and now it's gotten even worse because of the construction on the Verrazano Bridge. I guess they're repairing it. Two suggestions. Number one, if they would please open up the bus lane to start the carpools, or maybe all traffic, especially during non-busy hours, morning traffic. And number two, if they maybe would take down the toll booths heading to the Verrazano Bridge, Brooklyn Bound, because they're no longer being used, and that really slows down the traffic.
It's the big problem we have, Avi, is just too many cars on the roads. I will pass on your suggestions, but the trouble really is that more people want to use our roads with their own cars than the roads can accommodate, and the real answer is mass transit, and that's why I've been trying to push to get congestion pricing in, where we'd limit the number of cars hopefully coming into the city, but certainly generate revenues to let us expand and improve the mass transit system, and then people would take mass transit. If you had bus lanes that were in where we enforced the bus lanes so that the buses could go and we just didn't have people who broke the laws in the lanes like they do really on Madison Avenue. If we could have buses that went zipping by you when you're stuck in traffic and the buses were comfortable and affordable and safe, then you probably would say, hey, maybe I'll leave my car at home and take the bus, and that would be a good thing for everybody. But the traffic on Staten Island and coming across the Staten Island Expressway
horrific.
And the Verrazano
terrific.
Is... terrible. Another thing before we leave, John, it's occurred to me, if you're going to a religious service this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whatever your Sabbath is, it might be nice to say a prayer for the people who died and the bridge collapsed. There are a whole bunch of people missing, families and whatever. We did receive a lot of support from around the country and from Minnesota, Minneapolis area, 9/11, and I don't know that we can help them necessarily, but a prayer might be a nice way to do it.
I think that's a good reminder, and that's going to finish us up here. We'll get together next week, and hopefully life between then and now will be fine, and we won't have too many tragedies to talk about.
Bridges here are safe.
Yeah, they are indeed safe. Real fast, 15 seconds, the rail tunnel proposed under the Hudson. Could that be a rail tunnel for Staten Islanders, mass transit?
Some people do go from New Jersey all over Staten Island to get into Brooklyn to go out to, let's say, Nassau County. I don't think it would relieve very much traffic. Staten Island is just a problem. Two small roads. Everybody's got a car because there's no mass transit.
See you next Friday. Thank you very much. Mayor Michael Bloomberg again this morning at 77 WABC.